Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 12. Dave, a couple months ago, we're sitting here wondering if we're going to have football. Well, here we are, September 6th, Steelers-Ravens, 5 days away, 1 o'clock on Sunday.
Yes, sir. Ravens week it is. What a way to get things started off. And, yeah, you know, we got the preseason behind us now. The cuts have been made and all. And, you know, they had a good showing the final game against Carolina with most of the backups. And it's time to get this thing going for real here. And I can't wait, as Bart Scott likes to say.
Let's just touch on this Carolina game just for a second. Another impressive performance. The starters didn't go much, but basically, you know, we can look at this whole preseason and say things pretty much went exactly how the Steelers would like. Obviously, the Leftwich injury, the Baron Batch injury are the two notable injuries coming out of camp. But I got to say, all in all, I think a very successful camp, a good performance Thursday night. Anything stand out for you in that game?
I definitely liked what I saw, but, you know, Jonathan Dwyer, we've talked about him all offseason, David, and how, you know, we were not concerned about the ball in his hands, but what he does with the ball without, you know, when it wasn't in his hands. And I don't think there was any question that he'd already had the roster spot sewn up heading into that game. But if there was any question, it was settled real quick, especially on that block. I think it was early in the third quarter on a blitz pickup where he just stuck right into the hole there and just squared up nicely and perfect blitz pickup. You know, that was one thing that I saw in that game as far as he was concerned. Of course, obviously the long touchdown run, which there was great blocking on the play by Emmanuel Sanders, John Gilmore, and Wesley Saunders there to leave Dwyer with only really one guy to beat, and he just made a nice cut inside to go. And then Dwyer also showed up on a specials teams play. I can't remember if it was first or second half, but he really streaked down there and was in on the tackle there. So, you know, that's one guy that stuck out. I thought Wesley Saunders, the first two games, you know, preseason, he was a little bit, you could tell, I mean, he was a rookie, basically. The second two games against the Falcons and the Panthers, he really showed exactly the type player that he is. We really saw improvement in his blocking over those last two games. He was a little bit more active in the passing game as well. And as far as, let's see, someone else that kind of stuck out, Jason Worlds, I thought had a nice game. Morty Ivey, who ended up headed to the practice squad, had a good game as well. And I think, as you stated, the big thing coming out of all this, the entire preseason was, you know, only Leftwich and Baron Batch were really the only significant injuries, so to speak, throughout the whole preseason.
Yeah, with Taylor and McFadden on the sidelines, the young quarters got a lot of run in that game. We saw Cortez Allen take the field for the first time. I have to say, more than I expected from him. Not a lot of reps in practice. I thought he looked good out there. Donovan Warren looked good. Unfortunately for him, he was one of the guys cut, and we'll get into the practice squad. He didn't even actually make it to the practice squad. But I thought the young guys, Curtis Brown, they looked good. I was impressed with what I saw, I think, across the board. So some good stuff. What specifically, let me ask you about Trey Essex and Marcus Gilbert, what you thought of them?
Essex, you know, even despite the weight loss and all, and suppose I think he's still rounding into shape. Let's face it, he hasn't been back with the team too terribly long. Marcus Gilbert really looks ready to step in there should something happen. Of course, Jonathan Scott's going to get the opening nod at left tackle to be expected. But I thought Gilbert has really held his own, and this is a guy. You know, we were kind of worried about him missing that early time in preseason or in training camp with the hamstring and all, and, of course, not having the OTAs and mini camps. But it's a little bit easier on a rookie lineman, you know, to miss that type stuff than it is, say, a cornerback or something like that. So I thought Gilbert fared real well. I think he is going to be your backup left tackle. I expect him to be active Sunday against the Ravens. He's also taken quite a few snaps at the right tackle spot as well. So I think he's going to be your swing tackle. I think Trey Essex is going to be your swing guard, so to speak. He also got work at the center position for the first time. Now that Doug Legursky is going to be starting at right guard, you'll have both your centers in the game on the starting line, so to speak. So Essex has got to be ready to really play three positions should the need arise. But, you know, Essex, I'm not too worried about him. He is what he is. I would kind of worry if he had to be a prolonged right guard, you know, but let's just hope we don't get to that, you know, point.
Yeah, interesting situation for the Steelers when they're getting down to the cuts. They did it in two waves. They cut down to 58, and then they had to cut five more players the next day. I'm not really sure why they went about it the way they did, but let's take a look and let's highlight the guys they cut in that second cut. Cresdon Butler, Tony Hills, John Gilmore, Jeremy Kapanos, and Jarrett Crittenton. I guess the name that the two names there that are most interesting, certainly Cresdon Butler, the fifth round pick out of Clemson, I think last year, is a guy who he played okay in the preseason last year. He looked okay in the preseason this year. But you just wonder, you know, you've got so many young corners looking for spots. I was a little surprised. I think of all the cuts, to me, that was probably the most surprising. Then Tony Hills, I guess the story is pretty straightforward. Nobody thought Tony Hills was going to be on the 53-man coming into camp. And Tony Hills looked good before the exhibition games. He played reasonably well in the first two exhibition games, but it turned out he couldn't win that starting right guard spot and doesn't have the versatility really to play tackle, it looks like. And so he's gone. And I think maybe people are surprised because going into week three, it looked like maybe he was going to be the starting right guard. But once he didn't win that position, handwriting on the wall.
I wrote about the final five cuts on Steelers Depot, and, you know, yeah, there were a couple head-scratchers, maybe the obvious being Cresdon Butler, but overall not a total surprise on any of these guys. You know, if we start with Butler here, let's face it, this guy was on the bubble, and the decision came down to, you know, were the Steelers going to keep seven defensive cornerbacks, or were they going to keep their normal, you know, what they've done in the past to keep six? I actually had Butler making my roster as a seventh cornerback because I thought, you know, there's no way you're going to give up on Cortez Allen that quick, especially being as you know, there was no way he was going to get IR'd as soon as he played. We just didn't know all along how significant the injury was with that. And once Cortez had hit the field, you know, against the Panthers, as you mentioned, you know, he fared pretty well. Cresdon is a guy outside of maybe a splash play against the Falcons where he ran that back for a touchdown, and he got pretty mad at me on Twitter for calling that an easy interception, asked me if I could make that interception. Well, no, I'm not paid to make that interception. The receiver fell down, you know, and you're talking about Redmond pretty much telegraphed that, and that's a pick he should make. But, right. You know, Butler was on the bubble going into there. I kind of thought he might stick, but I also knew he would not clear waivers to make it back to the practice squad because, you know, Arizona had cut down to four cornerbacks earlier in the day, and you knew Ray Horton was going to be all over that, and I tweeted that out. So, you know, Butler, I would say a head scratcher. Tony Hills, I even tweeted this out after Doug Legursky had been, you know, named the right guard spot. You had to wonder at that point what worth Tony Hills had at that point, because this is a guy that I mean, even in preseason again this year, he cannot play left tackle. I mean, he is just too much of a liability there. And if his saving grace is the right guard spot, which I thought he played, you know, reasonably well at when given the opportunity in preseason, obviously it wasn't good enough, you know, for the coaches to give him the job over Doug Legursky. At that point, you had to say, okay, this guy is a one-trick pony, so to speak, at a backup right guard spot. You know, what good is he? And you might as well save that $1.2 million. Now, I had them keeping him over Chris Scott, who, you know, I thought Chris Scott was even worse at right guard, at right tackle. But the saving grace with Scott is you still have him under rookie contract for this year and next year. He basically, this basically is his rookie year after missing all of last preseason and most of the season last year on PUP list. You know, there's more there to work with. Tony Hills is what he is. There's not going to be any development there. I don't think he's been picked up off the waiver wire as of yet either. So, you know, John Gilmore, that could have gone either way. They obviously held him because they were thought about maybe keeping four tight ends, which I kind of thought they might do initially. Jeremy Capinose, I think that could have been a coin flip there too. The two guys punted to a dead heat. I kind of read too much into the situation about Capinose getting the early holding snaps and all on the field goals and all in the final game. And he also kicked two 263 yarders in that game as well. But overall, I would not say it was a surprise on any of those cuts. And I thought that bottom of end of the roster was a lot harder to judge this time around.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the question was, what are they going to do with Byron Leftwich? They made that decision pretty quickly to put him on the IR, so his season's over. So the whole debate about whether it was going to be Batch or Dixon being the third quarterback, that's moot, as both of them are on the roster. Going to the practice squad, I don't think any real surprises. John Clay, a back who's looked good, but, you know, I don't know that he has a future in the NFL, but they need an extra running back. Jamie McCoy, the tight end. Tyler Grisham, who, with him not making the roster this year, his NFL career may be coming to a close unless he gets a breakthrough injury. And then they sent two offensive linemen to the practice squad. Travis Turner is a big 6'7" tackle from Abilene Christian, and Malaki's the guy from Pittsburgh who can play some center. I was a little surprised that those were the two guys who went there, and Corbin Bryan, the defensive lineman, Morty Ivey, and Damon Cromartie-Smith, who was on the practice squad last year. Of those guys, I think the most interesting is probably Morty Ivey. Had a very good preseason. He's a guy who someday might be on the 53-man roster, but I don't look at these eight guys and have any of them really stand out to me and say, you know, when they develop, this guy's really going to be a guy who comes on and has a future with the Steelers. How about your thoughts on that?
Well, Grisham, I think, is the guy most likeliest to get plucked off of this thing, maybe by another team. You never know how injuries might go throughout the year. Grisham's gritty, man. I mean, he's a guy, he knows what he's doing out there. I think he's, you know, because of his size a little bit, he always gets that. Anytime you have, I don't mean to be not racist. Yeah, I'm not racist here. But anytime you have a white wide receiver, immediately the Wes Welker comparisons get thrown out there for a kid. And all like that. But I mean, plain and simple, this guy is a baller. He's just not good enough to crack the Steelers, you know, depth at wide receiver there. So he could be a guy that might get plucked off elsewhere as the season goes on. You know, I think he's deserving of that. Travis Turner, as you mentioned, I think that kind of comes down to this is a guy that has some potential maybe they want to take a look at. Kyle Jolly, they did the same with him last year. After a few seasons, you know, they kind of know what they have on him. And bless Travis Turner's heart. Boy, he needs that paycheck. He has three sets of twins.
Yeah.
So you got to root for, I know it's his own fault and all like that, but I don't think anybody asked for three sets of twins regardless. Malecki, I've kind of fallen in love with this guy and out of love with this guy, you know, during this preseason. You know, I kind of envision them maybe thinking this is the next Doug Legursky type player perhaps. Because I think, you know, this was the first time he's really got significant work at the center position. I'm just not convinced if he is a Doug Legursky type guy going forward, but, you know, at least they have a center out there should something happen. I don't think he would ever be a guy that you'd see on the 53-man roster. You know, regardless, it would take an extreme emergency for that. Morty Ivey, boy, the kid looked good, and a lot of people had this kid, you know, once again, you know, maybe making the 53-man roster. The Steelers chose to keep eight linebackers instead. This guy could definitely be a guy that you see on the 53-man roster should an injury happen this year. And Corbin Bryant was everybody's, I think he was Wolf's camp phenom and all like that. He showed pretty good in the preseason. I think he's more of a developmental guy with eyes on him getting a longer look next year at a defensive end spot when Aaron Smith, you know, more likely won't be back next year. So overall, no huge surprises, no diamonds. You know, there may be a diamond in the rough there, but as we've seen 9 times out of 10, you know, these guys are just career practice squad players.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a couple of guys to talk about who did actually make the roster. You know, obviously Arnaz Battle made the roster, and my 53rd spot, I thought it was going to go to Ivy over Battle. And we've talked about this in a couple of the podcasts, that when you're talking about the 51st, 2nd, 3rd spot, you're not necessarily talking about position. You're talking about guys and how they can contribute and maybe on special teams. And certainly Arnaz Battle made his mark on special teams. He's named a Steelers special teams captain. So good for him. He made the squad. He's an older guy. He caught some balls while he was out there, but I'd be very surprised if he's getting much burn in even the 5 wide receiver sets. The other guy, both Chris Hoke and Steve McClendon make the team as defensive linemen. Hoke is a versatile guy who's tried and true, been a part of all these teams over the last however long he's been there, 9, 10 years. And McClendon is a young guy. I think he went to Troy. Is that right?
I believe he went to Troy. He really has been on the come. He was really hot on Hoke's coattails, this preseason, especially in that Panthers game. I kind of noted that he looked like he was all over the place. Now, at 6'4", 280, is this guy really maybe a the future at nose tackle? I don't know. Possibly, I think he's more of a guy to be the next Chris Hoke going forward after this year, a guy that has gotten a little bit more work at the end spot as well. I don't see him as an every down or a base, every base formation type nose tackle, although he did show some good quickness and getting in the backfield, causing some disruptions during preseason. But as we all know, the time that he's in the game there and the experience he has, he should be dominating some of those younger offensive linemen in preseason. So it's not overly a surprise that Tomlin kept 7 defensive linemen over the 6, especially with question marks with Aaron Smith going forward and his health and all. And let's face it, McClendon, maybe he had enough burn and enough showing that he wouldn't have cleared waivers this go around.
Yep, I think that's probably right. You expected, because they waited to cut Crittenden, I expected to maybe see him go to the practice squad. He didn't go to the practice squad, and Donovan Warren didn't go to the practice squad. That's probably the guy that I was most surprised about. I thought he looked reasonably good in preseason. We talked about his ability to turn his hips and maybe run with guys. Maybe that was the area where he was going to be deficient. He didn't look too bad. He certainly tackled reasonably well. So I guess, of the names of the guys who got passed along, those would be the guys that I was looking at. The Steelers supposedly have worked out or are working out Doran Dickinson, Dickerson of a Pitt grad who is with the Texans, I think. They've talked about one or two other maybe local kids. And I think this is more, just get a file on these guys. They're, in case you need them in the future. Obviously, the tight end position with Wesley Saunders making the team, it's not a position where they are totally comfortable. That's apparent. They brought in John Gilmore. They kicked the tires on a couple other guys. I don't really expect to see a lot of activity on the waiver wire. The Steelers, we had heard Kevin Colbert talk earlier in the preseason that unless you're really upgrading a position, if it looks like it's even remotely close to even, you're going to stay with your guys, the guys who know the system, who know what you're doing. So I don't expect to see a lot of fluctuation here going forward. Whereas in years past, I do think on the edges, you could see a guy or two added.
Crittenden there, he was, if there was any surprise of a guy that was not included in the first round of cuts,
sure,
it was him. Maybe they just couldn't get a hold of him to cut him,
Yeah, seriously, that could be it. I was just shocked that he was one of the 5 guys left.
Yeah, and Donovan Warren, there's a reason. The longer that you kind of look at this, it's easy to fall in love with these guys during preseason. The guy got a lot of burn because of McFadden and Ike Taylor, of course, missing all that time that they did. They got a long look at Warren. This guy basically is just he is what he is. He's a zone guy. He's not going to, in my opinion, going to be a man guy, because of the way he cannot turn and run with these outside receivers. He kind of reminds me of just pretty much as a dime back, the way he kind of played, when I looked at his big picture, of playing and all, I think that's what he is. He really wasn't involved in too many pass breakups, although he was a sure-handed tackler and kept everybody up underneath for the most part, in these preseason games. I think it's just basically what the book has been on him the whole time. He just did not have the speed or the hip turns, that they thought when he came out of college there. He went undrafted. That draft, The Jets turned him loose. Of course, they were kind of loaded with corners coming out of camp once Revis got signed last year. Plus, I think Warren had a concussion, during camp too that limited him last year as well. But, you know, usually corners, if they've got any upside whatsoever, they're kept around. And he hasn't been, and I don't think he's surfaced anywhere else as of yet either. So, maybe a team will look at him more as, maybe a strong safety type. I don't know, but I think I wouldn't call it a surprise that he didn't make the practice squad there, with him. And, he had a good burn. He got some good visibility, so we'll see where his career goes from here. But I doubt he'll be back on the Steelers roster. As far as the two guys that you said for workouts, with the luxury now of Twitter and social media, David, we hear about these things more often than we used to. These guys are brought in all year long for workouts.
Yep.
Whatnot. Normally, we just never hear about them. Now we do. I think they're just kicking the tires on these guys. I would be surprised if either two of these guys are signed, to the practice squad.
Yep, I'm with you on that. The Steelers coming into camp, we've talked about this being a veteran team. There weren't many jobs available. There was a job to be the starting right guard. And, you had to think that Trey Essex at one point was going to maybe be that guy. That didn't work out very well for him coming into camp. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you get this, you get Tony Hill's maybe taking over the position. At the end of the day, Doug Lugersi is going to be the starter there at right guard. And I got to tell you, I'm comfortable with Lugersi there. I like what he brings. He's, they say he's the most cerebral of the linemen, even more so than Pouncey, a very bright guy. He's not the biggest guy, but he knows what he's doing. He had a very nice Super Bowl. And I got to, there's the question of, okay, he's really your backup center. So what happens if Pouncey goes down? Well, obviously Ligurski's going to move over and somebody's going to step in there. But do you want your backup center being your starting right guard? Hey, put the best five guys out there. Ligurski, I feel good for him being able to get the shot here and getting the opening day start.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. Although, after Essex went down game one or game two last year with that ankle injury last year, Ligurski was the first man up. Now, he didn't. I just don't know what's changed so much over a year's time. I think he's the best of the lot at right guard. Is he the right guy for the position? Well, I mean, definitely if they're going to be using the guards more on the move, pulling them to the left, this is something that Ligurski's definitely going to be better at, pulling to the left-hand side, than Hills. Hills just can never master that, and partly because of his size and the way he moves upright, he could not clear out the hole. He could get to the hole, but he just could not clear the hole because of not having leverage when he gets there. Ligurski, boy, this guy's compact. We've seen how many times have we seen him lined up in the fullback position before because of his short area quickness and his ability to clear the hole as well. I'm fine with the move. I'm totally fine with him being the opening gate, right guard for the Steelers. Like you mentioned, though, there is concern. What happens if Pouncey or if Ligurski goes down with the injury in a game? And that's why Essex, has gotten some work at center, which, kind of average at that, looking at some of the film from the Panthers game. I think there is concerns next year going into this draft, though. Keith Williams, we didn't even hit on that. Keith Williams, I don't think it was such a surprise that he was waived as much as it was a surprise that he, they didn't think enough of him to get him to the practice squad. So
yep.
That really, has a red flag on him there. You have to think that the Steelers at some point round, I would doubt that they would take a guard round one again unless they pick pretty high, which hopefully they won't. You would have to think a guard would have to be slated in again for round two or round three of the draft next year. But this could be a position that's on the move or stays in flux all year, with the right guard spot, because I worry about Ligurski when he has somebody lined up straight over the top of him still.
You have only seven new players on this roster. Actually, just saw a tweet by John Clayton saying the Steelers have the least turnover in their roster with 46 guys back from last year. I'm not sure exactly what he's counting, but in my numbers, I've got the top five draft picks and Wesley Saunders as the six rookies on the team. The only guy who didn't get signed, really, who might have contributed was Matt Spaeth, who went to the Bears. But the Steelers brought their own in. They took care of business. They They got a lot of contracts done. They were able to get under the cap. This is a very focused, an unexciting preseason for the fans, maybe, because there weren't a lot of newsworthy events, but very businesslike. You have to like the way they approached it, and you have to like the way they're set up to go into the season.
Well, we've talked about it in the past, how they were going to attack, you know, especially it showed us during free agency when they went after their own mostly again. They're going to try to take advantage of these teams that are switching, you know, switching schemes. A lot of players, you know, a lot of new teams with a lot of new personnel on them that just have not had the time to gel, you know, basically. So this is, like as you stated, this is a Steelers team that's got a lot of experience on their side. Mike Tomlin kind of addressed the age issue today during his press conference. You really, if this team can stay healthy, and that, you know, of course, that's almost the key with any team, you know, heading into a year is long-term health. But, you know, it isn't like these guys don't know the offensive scheme or the defensive scheme going forward, and you have to give them the edge right now, you know, with the veteran roster, you know, as we go to Baltimore.
Yep. And I guess there have been a bunch of number changes here in the past week. I'm not sure if you've got that all cataloged. We got the one I saw that Jason Worlds changed to 93. I think Cortez Allen went to 28 and Wesley Saunders went to 82. Any other number changes that you caught there in the last couple days?
I think that's the end of it. They'll all shake out here. In fact, Steelers.com probably update them any time here. Yeah, I hope you didn't buy your Wesley Saunders number 44 jersey. I always warn people after the draft and all, and I had a post up this year immediately after the draft when these kids get these numbers, you know, because they're going to change if they make the team and all like that. So, yeah, they'll shake out. No, I kind of find it interesting that Worlds changes to number 93, though. There might be some significance against that. I don't remember what his college number might have been, but we'll I'm sure that'll kind of filter out over the next day or two. So, but yeah, you know, this young class, it looks good. I think there's a few guys that can contribute instantly. Of course, you know, Marcus Gilbert, Cam Hayward's going to back up the right defensive end spot there. I think you'll see Curtis Brown get a lot of burn on special teams units. I expect Cortez Allen and Chris Carter to stay down quite a bit this year on the inactive list going forward. And of course, we talked about Keith Williams getting cut, and you know, it's unfortunate. Let me throw this out. What kind of race would we have had if Baron Batch had stayed healthy this preseason, David, and the way Jonathan Dwyer came on? Could we have looked at a situation where Mawaldi Moore would have been out of a job?
Yep. I told you coming in, I wasn't 100% convinced the Steelers would re-sign Mawaldi Moore. He is a versatile guy, but I got to think it is his last year on the roster. And yeah, that would have been a tough decision to see how they dealt with those three guys, two of them making the team. Now, maybe at the end of the day, Batch is the guy who goes to the practice squad for a year, and maybe John Clay's out of a job. But yeah, I think that was a definite possibility. But, you know, as we've seen last year, Mawaldi Moore, he's going to maybe get this year, I don't know, will he get five touches a week? Probably somewhere in the 3 to 5 range, I'm guessing, because Redmond's carries are going to go up and his touches are going to go up. But he's a guy who can do things, and he is certainly a good insurance blanket against anything happening, particularly in game, not necessarily week to week, but in game.
Yeah, David, Mawaldi Moore, you would think he's probably going to get about the same burn that he got last year, used the same way. He would come in, it seemed like, every second or third series there, maybe to spell Mendenhall. You could see, you know, Redmond sneak up and get those catches. I mean, get those touches this year, though, because Redmond, let's face it, this is a guy that silently had a fantastic training camp as well, and not too much has been, you know, talked about with him, especially with Dwyer having a good, you know, final couple of games there. And, of course, preseason, all the talk was about Baron Batch until he went down in camp there. I'm with you. I think Mawaldi Moore could have been out of a job if both Dwyer and Batch would have stayed healthy and Dwyer continued to do what he did. And Batch, you know, who knows what Batch would have done once he hit the field. But, I mean, he sure was looking as a camp phenom, of course, until that injury happened there. So they're set at running back. They're set at wide receiver. Quarterback, you hate to lose lose Byron Leftwich as a backup, and let's face it though, if Ben Roethlisberger goes down, what were we realistically looking at anyway there? So offense, I'm not worried about. Defense, you know, it has some age on its side, but it seems like we've talked about this the last 2 years. So you really got to like how Tomlin put this squad together heading into this season, and I'm excited right now.
Let's get back to our favorite early season topic, Manny Sanders. It looks like, he got some playing time. I don't know that he's 100% healthy, but he certainly appears healthy enough. He's going to get some playing time this week. You and I talked in February right after the Super Bowl and said, well, who's the guy next year who's going to really step up? Offensively and defensively, we said we talked about Crezdon Butler as a guy the Steelers would like to have step up. That didn't happen. Manny Sanders is a guy that I think in February you and I both said him being injured in the Super Bowl was a big deal, certainly affected the outcome of that game, and we expect big things from him this year. Does the lack of his reps in preseason cause you to think that maybe he doesn't work in quite as quickly, or your expectations still quite as high as they were then?
It's been documented on these podcasts, man. I've been worried about those feet, and I was so glad to see him, get a lot of burn against the Panthers there. And in fact, I think I got him down as 26 snaps in that game. He did a lot of running on that foot. He looked good. His route running looked fine. He made the catches. That block that he made on a Jonathan Dwyer long touchdown run there, we've seen that before. So he hasn't lost that part of his game and all. There's going to be I'm not worried right now. I mean, I'm over my worry. Of course, anytime you have a guy with foot injuries, you worry about a reoccurrence or anything like that. But my fears that I had, starting the offseason and especially after the second procedure that Sanders had, I am over that now. And I might have overestimated that, but, until the guy plays, you have to be worried about it. And he played this past game against the Panthers, and he looked damn good. So I expect him and Brown to get both looks at the third guy into the game. In fact, I think the latest depth chart really has Jericho Cotchery as kind of your fifth guy.
Yep.
What kind of luxury is that if you get into a third and, 10, 12 situation, you're putting on the field, Ward, Sanders, Brown, Cotchery, and Wallace all on the field at the same time. three of those guys are definite chain movers in Ward, Cotchery, and Emmanuel Sanders. And the other two guys can really stretch the field for you as well. So, boy, Bruce Arians, he's got to love, this might be his final year, and he might finally say, F the run. I know Ben wants to throw it, but you could maybe see some well-unbalanced run-pass situations this year, with those weapons that they have. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be way off kilter, but it might be a little bit more off kilter than what people think, what they think the balance might be.
Yeah, crazy depth at wide receiver. You just wonder how many balls are going to go around to this offense. How's Heath Miller going to get his catches? Heath Miller and Mike Wallace have been flying under the radar here all through camp. How many touches is Rashard going to get, and how many balls is he going to catch out of the backfield? I don't remember going into the season feeling like there was a team that's this explosive in my days following the Steelers, unless you go way back to the 70s. And, it was a different era back then, but with Swan and Stallworth, Franco, you had Benny Cunningham on some of those teams. They've got crazy depth at the skill position and talent. This team is going to be tough to stop. Look, it's no different than what I think we thought coming into camp. We're pretty much at the same spot. They're weak at corner. We'll see how McFadden plays. He's kind of the guy defensively who you question. Obviously, Troy looks like he's healthy. That's going to be a big, big, big impact player on the defense. And the safeties, the safeties have been good. But the secondary is the issue for the Steelers this year. There's no question to me that this is a team that's capable of scoring, 24, 25, 28 points a game every single week. And if the defense is anywhere close to as good as last year and the corners step up and do a good job, this team again could, roll out 11, 12, 13, 14 regular season wins and, get a first round bye in the playoffs.
Yeah, and something we ain't talked about either is the three tight end sets also that Arians can now use to really, you won't – you won't be so you know, defenses won't be able to key on just a Heath Miller this go around, you know, and one wide receiver, because now I think we both agree that Wesley Saunders can stretch the field. He's a dual purpose tight end, something that they didn't have in Matt Spaeth, and we saw David Johnson used a lot more, you know, than past years as a pass catching tight end. We saw the first two plays immediately in the Falcons game. So how do you defend about against this? And this is something that the Patriots have been trying to do as well with who is it, Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez over there, yep, that has made them so brutal and all. If you have multi-talented tight ends that you can interchange in different you know, formations and personnel groupings in this offense, it's got to be a defensive coordinator's nightmare on the side of the ball of what to, you know, how to defend this. On the plus side too, what you can do in this is you can give Heath Miller possibly a few more snaps off in games this year, whereas Heath Miller normally takes about 98% or 90%. He has the plays on the field. If you go look at back and look at my personnel play charts from last season, he's always on the field. Now that you have Saunders and David Johnson kind of maturing both at the same time and able to be used in the passing game and the blocking formations the same way, you might be able to get Heath Miller off the field and preserve him a little bit more. So I'm with you, man. I mean, I know we wear these yellow, black and yellow glasses a little bit sometimes and don't look at it objectively, but I don't see how you cannot look at this offense this year and think, you know, how it's not the best that we've seen in probably, I can't even go back that far to remember this excitement.
Yeah. What about just in terms of Saunders, is he going to get a helmet on Sunday, or you think he'll be down?
I think he's going to be up. You know, if you're keeping a guy like that, a third tight end, he has played some special teams. I don't see how you keep him down right now, especially the way Bruce Arians likes to run these three tight end personnel groupings and all. So I expect him to be up.
Because, you know, when you're starting to think about guys who are going to be down, if Gilbert's going to be down,
I don't think Gilbert's going to be down. I think Gilbert's going to be up. I think you're going to see Ramon Foster and Chris Scott down.
Okay, so you think Foster's down. Okay,
right.
Gotcha.
They're only going to dress seven linemen.
So Essex is definitely going to dress.
Yeah, Essex has to dress. So that leaves Foster and Chris Scott down. I think you're going to see Cortez Allen. You're going to see him down.
Curtis Brown probably down.
Curtis, that could go either way there. Let me pull this up real quick. And
obviously Jonathan Dwyer's down. Chris Carter's going to be down.
Right. So there's – and see, you only have to have seven down this year. So right, yep, now I've got it as Curtis Brown, possibly Curtis Cortez Allen, Jonathan Dwyer, Ramon Foster, Chris Carter, Tony Hills, and who are we missing there? We're missing one.
Not Tony Hills, because he's not going to be.
Not Tony Hills. I'm sorry. That'd be Chris Scott. Still, I'm reading my 53-man roster projection from last week. So Chris Scott would be down.
And Steve McClendon.
And Steve McClendon. Yeah, so there's your seven there. So Brown, Cortez Allen, Jonathan Dwyer, Ramon Foster, Chris Scott, Chris Carter, and Steve McClendon. So those will likely be your seven, I would think.
Yeah, so that's So Saunders does get a helmet under that scenario. Yeah, interesting stuff. Dave, we're gonna get at least one more podcast in before the weekend, and we're working on our schedules. We're sorry this one had a little delay. We had a little activities that we had to take care of, and of course the Pirates played five straight day games. We've had rain delays as it rains continues to rain in Pittsburgh. Seemingly every day for the last week. Any other big topics here? I know we're gonna spend some time talking about the Ravens, and we haven't spent a lot of time in this preseason looking around the NFL. So we'll spend a good 20 minutes on one of these podcasts talking about the Ravens, and we'll also just highlight some of the bigger picture issues around the NFL, like we like to do when we get in our weekly routine, which looked like it's going to be Monday, Wednesday, Friday going forward here once the regular season gets started.
Yes, indeed. And recapping the Tomlin presser today, it really wasn't much of anything. He did his typical praising of the Ravens. He said Chris Carter is basically the only significant injury heading into this game. Ike Taylor and Bryant McFadden should be fine and good to go. An interesting thought, he said James Harrison is likely sandbagging in regards to his health of his back. And he said Harrison likes to play, and Tomlin expects Harrison like play. So that was a cute little Tomlinism that time. He defended William Gay pretty significantly in this presser, said, you know, Gay shows good awareness and is combative against the run, shows blitz capabilities, and kind of likened what, you know, Gay does to more like a safety type play. And I thought that was a good type analogy there. But outside of that, we didn't learn anything from the press conference. As Tomlin says, we have two trains heading on one track, and we'll see you on Sunday. So we'll be back with these people later on this week, and we'll get more into in-depth analysis of this upcoming game against the Ravens.
Yep, and if you're not following Dave on Twitter, you can follow him at Steelers Depot. You can follow me at Hammer Speaks. Of course, SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive site on the internet to get all your latest and greatest Steeler info. Anything to wrap up with, Dave?
Nothing. I've got nothing on my end. Please subscribe on iTunes and all the various outlets. Make sure you follow David on Twitter at Hammer Speaks. DT on Pirates is great Pirates coverage as well. So it's football season, baby. Let's get it cranked up. It's Ravens week.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, episode 12 of season 2. That's a wrap.